Hi, and welcome to Know the News. My name's Becca Martin Brown, and I'm the features editor for the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and this is our weekly look at the news you should know about coming up Sunday. Since its inception in 2007, Fort Smith Marshall's Museum has had a tough road, but it's finally opening to the public July 1st. The museum, located at 789 Riverfront Drive along the Arkansas River, expects about 125,000 visitors each year and features 18,000 square feet of permanent exhibit space in the 50,000 square foot building, according to Ben Johnson, museum CEO. Johnson said he thinks many will be surprised by the impact the museum will have on Fort Smith, the River Valley, and the state. He believes the museum is an opportunity to showcase the best of Arkansas, alongside Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville and the Clinton Presidential Library in Little Rock. River Valley reporter Thomas Ascente has an interview with Johnson here.
Well, Doug Babb, thank you so much for joining me once again to talk about the Marshall's Museum. You and I have we've spoken several times about the Marshall's Museum over the past couple of years or so. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you, Thomas.
Wonderful. Now, for our readers who maybe don't know, your title is that you are the chairman of the Marshall's Museum Board of Directors. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct, Thomas. We basically have two boards. One is an operating board for the museum. That's the United States Marshall's Museum Board. And then we have a foundation which raises money, and that is a separate board.
You know, the Marshall's Museum is due to open to the public on July the 1st. To give our readers a bit of perspective, you first became involved in this project in 2008. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. We were awarded the project in January of 2007. And the first board of directors, in the beginning, there was just one board. And I was on that first board in 2008. And I've been involved basically ever since 2008, over the last 16 plus years.
All right. And when you say that we were selected for this project, you mean that's when Fort Smith was chosen to be the site of this new National Museum that's going to be opening next week. Is that right?
That's right. Back in 2006 and early 2007, the city of Fort Smith, community leaders all came together in the Bring It Home campaign. And Bring It Home refers to the fact that the Judge Parker's court was here in Fort Smith, and more people rode into the Indian Territory and more people were killed in the line of duty in the U.S. Marshal Service riding out of Fort Smith. So we felt that the logical home for the museum was Fort Smith because of the historical connection with the United States Marshal Service and Judge Parker's court. And we were fortunate to land the opportunity to build a museum after the Bring It Home campaign in early 2007.
Right. And for our readers who don't know, Judge Isaac Parker was a federal judge stationed here in Fort Smith. He has a courthouse that you can, in downtown Fort Smith, that you can visit to this day. But I understand that's not the only historical connection that the Marshall's Museum that the Marshal Service has to Fort Smith. Could you speak to a little bit about some notable figures in the U.S. Marshal Service, like, say, Bass Reeves?
Yeah, I think that probably the person who's become the most famous over the last 10 or 15 years is Bass Reeves. Bass Reeves was a slave before the Civil War and actually escaped from his master after the Civil War and went into Indian Territory and basically became friends with the Indian tribes in the Indian Territory, got to know their languages. He ended up in Fort Smith and was one of the top marshals for Judge Parker. He arrested more people than any other person riding out of Fort Smith. And he very famously even arrested his own son after his son was accused of murdering his wife. So he was a very famous lawman. In fact, they're making a film about Bass Reeves this year.
Wow, really? I heard something about that before. As somebody who's been with this project since 2008, could you provide a, a little bit of your perspective on how it feels to have the museum finally open after after all these years, over a decade of work that's gone into it. Like, what's been going through your mind as the public opening approaches?
Well, I can tell you, Thomas, that as I walk into the gallery space, it's a little under 20,000 square feet of gallery space. My first reaction is I become euphoric, because this is literally a dream come true, seeing it come to reality. I think that we all feel a little bit overwhelmed by the enormity of our accomplishment. It is going to be a world-class museum, as good as any museum in the United States of America, and it is going to be something that brings 150,000, 120,000 visitors to Fort Smith, and that's just going to have a tremendous economic impact on our community. It's going to be very, very beneficial. So after working on this for 16 years, I would have to say all of us feel a sense of great accomplishment, really, because this has been an extraordinarily difficult project.
Of course, you say that the foundation's been responsible for raising money for this. From what I understand, the foundation's capital campaign amounts to about $50 million to get this museum open, to build the building, to get the exhibits built and installed, and properly staff and operate the place when it opens. And I don't have any experience on the subject, but I would have to imagine that raising about $50 million is, from a wide variety of sources, is difficult even in the best of times. Could you speak to some of the challenges or difficulties that the museum and its foundation have faced in trying to make this museum a reality?
Certainly, Thomas. The first thing I would say is that we did not get any federal government funding from this. The Marshals Service, the federal government, is not permitted to donate money to a project like this. So we basically had to raise the $50 million from local and regional individuals, local and regional foundations and corporations. We also raised $3 million through issuing a commemorative coin, and we received several million dollars from the state of Arkansas. But largely, this was raised locally and regionally. But here is the difficult thing about this project. We had to raise funds during the period of 2009, 10, 11, when we were experiencing a severe recession. Then after that, of course, we have faced an international pandemic, and nobody was able to raise funds during the pandemic because you couldn't meet with people. You couldn't cultivate donors. You can't raise money by Zoom. You've got to do it by personal relationships. Then, of course, after that, we faced record inflation and supply chain issues. There were some materials that we wanted to use that we couldn't use. We experienced significant cost increases related to the experience itself. The total cost of the experience is going to be just under $11 million. The original estimate was 8.9. So when you're looking at a finite number of donors in a region, in a regional fundraising effort, it becomes very difficult to raise that amount of money. There is no end to the needs in our community or in our region. So we weren't just raising money for the Marshals Service, we were having to compete with others. But the bottom line is, we did it.
Could you talk about some of your strategies that you guys had to come up with to basically overcome these obstacles that you probably had no way of really knowing about? Nobody could have predicted the impact that COVID-19 would have on everything. Like, how did you and other members of the museum leadership address that?
Well, in the beginning, what happened is that we did a feasibility study. This is back in 2007 and 8, when Dr. Sandy Sanders was the executive director, and a feasibility was undertaken. And in the course of that, the initial donor base was identified. And I would have to say that during the period of 2010, 11, 12, that original donor base of regional and local foundations, companies, and individuals was the primary source. That was really the primary source for the first $25 or $30 million. When we got into the difficult time of the pandemic, we had to use our website. We had to use Zoom. We had to use a direct mail campaign. And now we have been able to return to normal fundraising. We have a new chief development officer and foundation president, Susan Naiman, who is absolutely doing a great job with our new donor base. We are now getting into Northwest Arkansas and cultivating new donors in Northwest Arkansas. And we will attempt to expand that regionally as well. So fundraising is never done. It's never over, certainly not in a museum context. We will always need to raise funds to support our operations, but we are now back to conventional, traditional fundraising.
In terms of the impact that you kind of expect the museum to have, I'm glad you brought up a feasibility study because in the story I've written, I've included information from a feasibility study that you guys had done in 2018. And according to the information I was able to get, the museum expects an annual attendance of 125,576 people during a typical year. This is based on data by Leisure Development Partners, a consulting practice headquartered in London. Of course, the first couple of years after opening are expected to overperform in comparison to more typical years to follow. And apparently also the Arkansas Economic Development Institute used the information provided in the feasibility study to estimate the museum and related tourist expenditures will have an annual impact of $13 to $22 million on Sebastian County. And that's also projected to result in an additional 286 full-time equivalent jobs in the county. And you brought this up a little bit before, I believe, but I wanted to ask you what impact based on this information, do you believe that the museum will have when it finally opens, and how it will, what it'll all bring to the River Valley region?
Well, Thomas, I'm familiar with both of the studies that you referred to. Yeah. The first one was sort of a back of the envelope type of thing, and then the one that was done in Little Rock was okay, but I would not call it particularly sophisticated. Mm-hmm. I think both of them grossly understate the economic impact that this will have, not just in Fort Smith, not just in Northwest Arkansas, but in the entire state. You know, our first year operating plan calls for 120,000 visits. It probably will be more. If you think about people going to Fort Smith and staying a couple of days and staying at motels and eating out at restaurants, and going to downtown, going to the mall, and buying things, the economic impact, in my view, is going to be in the tens of millions of dollars. Hmm. Not 13, not 22, the tens of millions. I think it's going to have a completely transformational impact on the community. I believe that if you take a couple of $100 spend per person over the course of a 2 or 3 day period, you can see the numbers add up very, very substantially. And I expect that we'll be part of a group of museums that people visit. They may go to the Crystal Bridges. They may then go to the Cowboy Museum in Oklahoma City, come down and visit the Marshall's Museum, then go to the Clinton Library. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for all of these museums to jointly market with each other to bring even larger volumes of people to the museum. And I agree. I think in the first year, we will have a larger number than is normal. And in the first few years, it'll be a significant number. Then it'll taper off somewhat. But we will see soon, starting July 1, the level of interest should be substantial.
Turning our attention a little bit to the actual opening, I think it's going to be happening next week. If a member of the public were to go to the museum, attend the public opening, what all could they expect to see and do at the opening? From talking with you and also talking with Ben Johnson, the present CEO of the museum, for the past several times I've written about this museum, I noticed that you guys were careful to call to refer to the exhibits as an experience, as in this is not just a bunch of things on a wall or under glass. Like, what actually is the museum experience? that people will be able to partake in.
Yeah, let me describe that, Thomas, because I will tell you that every group that we've brought through the museum so far, before we've opened, has been amazed by the museum. In fact, that's the word they all use. They all say, "This is amazing. We had no idea." So when people enter the museum, they come into the atrium, which is a three-story area that is spectacular and looks out over the Arkansas River into what used to be Indian territory. And it's all plate glass. And it's just stunning. When people buy a ticket, they'll turn the corner and they will go into the gallery space, but they'll go in through a 28 feet high by 25 feet wide aluminum U.S. Marshal's badge on the wall. It is just stunning. And they'll first walk into the To Be a Marshal Gallery, and they will see a United States courthouse that has been built there, and they will see the Constitution, and there'll be explanations about the Constitution and what marshals do. And they'll talk about George Washington's legislation in 1789, creating the first 13 marshals. And there'll be a video about To Be a Marshal. And then you will go through a room that is a timeline of all of the significant things that the marshals have been involved in from 1789 to the current time. But then people will turn the corner and they will absolutely be stunned, because they will then see what we call Campfire Stories Under the Stars. And it is about a 50 foot wide, 30 foot tall rock. And it looks like you're in the mountains. It is just stunning in its enormity. And then there are four characters who are life size, an old West Marshal, a current Marshal, a Marshal from the 60s, and a Marshal from the 1800s. And they're telling stories. And the ceiling is stars. So it's like Campfire Under the Stars. And then there's a silhouette on the rock of what the story is that's being told. When you go into the Frontier Marshal's Gallery, on the left, you see a saloon, an Old West saloon. And on the right, you see a United States Marshal's office from the 1800s. And you walk into the saloon, and there is a video table that basically has cards on it. It's a poker table. And you can actually play against other people on it. And what you do is you guess, you get clues, and then you have to guess the name of the Old West character. And then you walk up to this unbelievable, beautiful Old West bar, and there's a great big mirror. And all of a sudden, a bartender appears in the mirror, and he's like 3D, and he looks real. He looks like a real person. And he starts telling you, come on up to the bar and have a beer. And then he tells eight different stories. And you, the mirror looks like a TV then as you go through the stories. When you go into the marshal's office, you'll hear stories about Bass Reeves. And then in that same gallery, there is the Going Snake incident, where more marshals were killed in the line of service. And that is a little theater that explains that. Now, when you go next into the A Changing Nation Gallery, you can go into the Marshal's Challenge, which is basically like a courtroom. And in the courtroom, there's a video screen up front, and you are confronted with a situation regarding a criminal. And you will sit at a workstation, and you will have to guess what the right actions are in order to deal with this criminal. So it's like a video game. So that shows how interactive it is. There really are experiences. There are a few objects as well, like Bass Reeves' gun. But generally speaking, you're going through experiences. I'll give you another example. In the Modern Marshals Museum, which talks about modern marshals today, there is a theater that is called In Their Own Words. And you get to pick the type of story you want to hear. And then on a screen, a former marshal tells the story of what happened in dealing with a particular individual. There are another example of the experience is in the Modern Marshals gallery. There are two opportunities for people to run in place. And then there's a great big video screen, and you're basically trying to apprehend a criminal, and he or she is going into a garage and then going into a building and running on the street. And you've got to be able to run quickly enough to apprehend the criminal. So what you can see, Thomas, from my high level description is that these are experiences. These are interactive. Many of these are interactive electronic experiences that really put you in the place of a marshal figuring out what to do. There are some objects under glass, but that's the exception, not the rule.
Right. You'd be actually say this museum demands a bit more visitor participation, engagement to fully get the museum. Is that right?
Yeah, I think what it is, it is a learning experience. And the best way for people to learn is to engage and not just look at something and read a plaque on the wall. And so our whole design was oriented toward immersiveness, as Ben Johnson, our CEO, would say, immersive, meaning that you become engaged in understanding what the Marshal Service has done over time, and you get to understand the real people who were involved in certain historical events, and it puts you in their context.
While you were talking just now, I was going over a 3D kind of floor plan that Ben Johnson actually sent me this morning about the museum. I could see where you could come in, and I was pretty impressed by it. So I could kind of see what you were talking about as you were speaking. But yeah, it's a fully, it seems like a fully interactive, proactive experience for local visitors. And one that I spoke with Lynn Johnson, Lynn Wasson, I'm sorry, the interim director of the Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau. And she said that, you know, the museum will include all the things you said, but it will also allow people to get a full sense of like a survey of all of American history, she said, with the Marshal Service being the country's oldest federal law enforcement agency.
Well, what we like to say, Thomas, is the history of the United States of America is the history of the United States Marshal Service. Every significant event in our history involved in one shape or form of another, the United States Marshal Service.
And outside of the exhibit experience, there's also, I understand, room for temporary rotating exhibits, you know, to give people incentive to come back to see what's changed. Also, the Samuel M. Seacard Hall of Honor to honor the marshals who died.
That's all right. And it's important to mention that we've got about a 4,000 square foot special exhibits gallery, which will change several times during the year. And that will be an attraction that brings people back over and over again to see what is new. And we have a gift shop that is open and fully operational. And we will have a cafeteria that will be open and available. And there is the Samuel M. Seacard Hall of Honor, honoring all of the marshals and deputy marshals who've fallen in the line of service. Overall, it's 50,000 square feet. So even though that's about 20,000 square feet of gallery space, there's another 30,000 square feet. It is a very big building, and it is an iconic structure. It is fashioned after the United States Marshal's badge. And if you're up on the Garrison Avenue Bridge and you look down at it, you can see that it looks like a Marshal's badge.
After that initial opening, after that initial high kind of wears off, what does the museum have planned going forward?
Well, I think the most important thing to mention that we've not discussed yet is the National Learning Center. Because the museum is not just about the exhibits and the galleries and the experiences. This is also about learning. And so, you know, we have a chief program officer, Leslie Higgins, and she will be responsible for creating programs for children, for elementary school, junior high school, adult learning, focusing on the United States Constitution, the different branches of government, the rule of law, all of the things that go with law enforcement really are backed by the Constitution. So we have an opportunity to reach out not just to Fort Smith, not just to Northwest Arkansas or Arkansas, but nationally. as we have been already, with national programming. And so this is going to be as much a learning center and a teaching center as it will be a museum.
And speaking with Lynn Wasson with the Convention and Visitors Bureau again, when I spoke with her about how the museum will impact the Bureau, I mean, she had spoken about how the Bureau works very closely with the museum and that it will spend the next several years publicizing the launch of the museum and promoting the museum to people throughout the country who are, you know, considering where to go on vacation or have business meetings or conventions and all that. Could you kind of speak to the museum's end of things, like how it's going to be working with the Bureau or others or by itself to kind of put itself out there for to let people know that it's open?
Well, we'll be working with all of the groups you've discussed. We'll be working with other museums and joint marketing. We'll be working with the state and local tourism groups. We certainly will be working with our local people in Fort Smith who are focusing on tourism, because this is going to be very much a partnership among all of the different entities that have influence in bringing people to Fort Smith and Northwest Arkansas to see all of the different things of interest. And so, yes, this will be a very collaborative process among a large number of people.
Lynn had said that, I'm quoting her directly, it, meaning the museum, will be at the forefront of all the marketing that we do, we being the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And a couple of the people I spoke to said that timing of this, of all of this, of everything that we've been talking about is very good considering other things going on in Fort Smith right now. I spoke with LaVon Morton, one of the members of the Fort Smith Board of Directors, and he said that the timing fits in very well, particularly in regards to the to what's going on at Ebbing Air National Guard Base here in Fort
Smith. Yeah, the 188. Yeah, with 188, and that's going to be a wonderful economic boon to Fort Smith as well.
LaVon had actually said that the museum will give the military members and their families who are expected to move to the River Valley as a result of this foreign military sales program coming to Fort Smith, it'll give all of them a new amenity, something to do while they're here.
LaVon is a good friend, and I respect him, and he's absolutely right in what he's saying. You know, that is one of the reasons why people will want to live in Fort Smith. That's one of the reasons people will want to move there. It's one of the reasons why when people move there in connection with the 188th and what's happening, they'll have a wonderful national museum to come and see right in Fort Smith. So it really is going to be something that draws people not just from the United States. It's going to draw people from around the world.
Well, Doug, I think that'll just about do it for right now. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Is there anything else that you'd kind of care to say about the museum, your role in it, or anything related to what we've been talking about?
No, Thomas, I would just simply say I do appreciate the coverage of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And I think it's wonderful that you are focused on covering the opening on July 1 and the special event we're going to have on the 29th. I think that everybody in the state of Arkansas is going to be very, very proud of the United States Marshals Museum. And I think that everybody in Fort Smith is going to be very proud that we have a museum of this quality in our community. Thank you for the interview, Thomas.
Thank you. Take care and have a wonderful day, sir.
Thank you very much.
For more about the U.S. Marshals Museum, catch Thomas Sacenti's story in Sunday's Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette and the River Valley Democrat Gazette. Of course, we have a lot more stories coming this weekend, and here are some of them. Speaking of Fort Smith, the school district's Peak Innovation Center keeps flooding, and the school board is trying to figure out why and who's to blame. Reporter Monica Brick brings us that story. Northwest Arkansas Pride Weekend kicks off Friday night, and there will be a number of events, including the Pride Parade at 5 p.m. Saturday. Stacy Ryburn will recap that for us. A study by the University of Arkansas Center for Business and Economic Research estimated the economic impact of cycling in Northwest Arkansas to be around $159 million annually. Ron Wood takes us through that report. And summer is commonly a challenging time for our local blood supply, as donations typically dwindle. Reporter Tracy Neal takes a look at the current status of Northwest Arkansas blood supply and tells us where and when people can donate. In sports, our staff will keep you posted on this weekend's Rodeo of the Ozarks action and how the Northwest Arkansas Naturals fare in their weekend series against Tulsa. Plus, we'll take a look back at the spring sports season with our All Northwest Arkansas and All River Valley Boys Soccer Awards. And in features this week, brush up your Shakespeare and get ready for The Tempest coming next week to Northwest Arkansas thanks to Arkansas Shakespeare Theater. Morgan Hicks, the director, will not only be featured in a story in Sunday's What's Up, but she's featured in a What's Up podcast that you can find on our What's Up podcast channel. Also in What's Up, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas in a partnership with Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art will bring to life Diego Rivera's America with songs from Latinx composers. Read about that in What's Up this weekend. And of course you know who the redheaded stranger is, but do you know that his son will be at the Arkansas Music Pavilion with him? Check that out and more in What's Up. All of this and more will be available to our subscribers on our tablet and smartphone apps and at our websites, nwaonline.com and rivervalleydemocratgazette.com. To those of you who are already our subscribers, we want to thank you again for your support of local journalism. If you're not a subscriber, I hope you'll consider becoming one. We have a special offer for our podcast listeners. Just visit nwaonline.com/podcast23 to get started. You can also click the subscribe button on our websites, nwaonline.com and rivervalleydemocratgazette.com. Or you can call us, remember phones, at 479-684-5509. Be sure to say you're a podcast listener. Know the News is a weekly podcast brought to you by the newsrooms of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette and the River Valley Democrat Gazette. Thanks for listening. Again, I'm Becca Martin Brown, your host this week. Have a great weekend, and until next Friday, so long.